D5, a bill which passed the Oregon legislature on racial profiling as well as drug penalties. And Kimberly, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to be here.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is also available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Board meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month, starting at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Labor Radio. Of the working class, by the working class, for the working class, the only program of its type in Oregon or Southwest Washington. I'm Stephen Siegel, and I'm here with my co-host, Chris Reiser.
Hey, Chris. Good evening.
Hey. Also sitting in with us today is Brian Chu. Brian teaches, he's a member of Portland Association of Teachers. I'll let him tell you a little bit more about himself.
Yeah, what do you teach, Brian?
Children.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, Labor Radio comes on every Monday at 6 p.m. Chris and I are public school teachers, and we host every second Monday of the month. And Chris, why don't you go ahead and get us started?
Yeah, so we had the great good fortune of being able to speak with educator Curtis Acosta, who actually went to school here at Willamette University in Salem, Oregon, got his undergraduate degree, and then he went back to Tucson to teach. And so we were so fortunate to spend some time with him on Saturday. We spoke with him about his background, how he got into education. He is involved with an ongoing legal battle in Tucson, Arizona, regarding the Mexican-American Studies program, which was banned by law in 2010 because the folks who wrote the law believed that the program was inciting rebellion against the United States of America. And so we spoke with Curtis Acosta about the legal battle. We talked with him about his involvement with his union and also the relationship to the union to that fight over the Mexican American Studies program. It was a highly successful program where they have tons of data to show that they were graduating more Latino students than the general Latino population, and this program was incredibly successful. So we asked Curtis in the interview about his early involvement with the Tucson Education Association, and this is what he had to say.
I had mentors at my building that really took care of me, and one of the first things they told me is, like, you got to join the union. And I was like, sure. I mean, you know, that sounds like, you know, all my mentors were in the union. You know, it seemed like the thing to do. I think vaguely aware. I was young. I was like 22. Mm. I was vaguely aware that you know, NEA was a big thing,
right?
Nationally, right? But I wasn't. You know, it's not like we don't do a good job, I don't think, in teacher preparation programs talking about this. Even historically, which I think is just an absolute missed opportunity and misstep. We can talk about that later.
Okay.
Things to say about this. Okay. Type of preparation. But So, but my early days were just, you know, dues paying member, make sure I was at the, you know, the meetings that were on our campus. I was a Tucson High teacher, really blessed. I think I was at the school, that was the hotbed of union activism and strength, as a building. And as I matured, I grew in knowledge of what the union provided. And knowledge about the importance of it. There were, you know, a few times when colleagues of mine were, their due process was being violated, and I was aware that the union helped in those cases, and even some activism at our own site to make sure that the principal was who had violated the due process understood that we would not go gently into that night. So I remember us writing a letter letter of resistance.
Okay.
You know, there's different levels of resistance, and we're going back quite a ways, so I forget the formal names of them now.
But okay.
It was a letter saying that further action would be taken if due process for our colleague wasn't being honored. And to be clear, that meant we were going to walk, you know, we were going to protest, like, by not coming into work. In a one day or an organized effort. So it was a shot over the bow to this administrator who was, you know, trampling on due process to that they needed to back up, and cooler heads prevailed with for him, and he was directed by the district site to open up communication, and he did much better by our colleague. And so I remember that being a huge moment in my kind of upbringing in the union, and I think after that is when I said, listen, I want to be part of building leadership, you know. So I became a rep for our union at my building after that, and one of the things that came out of the compromises that were made with our new administration that had kind of overstepped their bounds in this case that we checked was a monthly meeting between the administration and union reps at our building.
So that was Curtis Acosta speaking about his early participation and involvement with the Tucson Education Association. What might strike some of our local listeners is that he said it was recommended that he join the union. Arizona is a right-to-work state, which means that every new teacher has the option as to whether or not they want to join the union and pay dues, even though they still would have the same protections as union members should they be faced with discipline or any kind of recourse from their administrators. But I just wanted to drop that in. So there's a lot in there, though, right, about his early days and about what he was excited about. What did you guys take away from that?
You know, he came in and he was basically, he said he was clueless about the union. And I think that's a pretty common perspective to come in, just really not understanding what a union even is. Mm-hmm. And he did mention teacher prep programs as a place where he thought that could be a place where teachers could learn about unions, the history of unions, and how they are relevant or how they should be more relevant today. So that's one of the things that struck me.
Yeah, and I kind of wonder, you know, what that would actually look like. Just, you know, thinking about my own experience in graduate school and how that would fit and how that would work. I think it's a good idea. We should be more informed. I wasn't very informed at all. I took it upon myself to learn about what it was that was offered. But I'm really curious about what that might look like, given other courses that were offered by a mandate, and I think we're going to get into some of that a little bit later. And the quality of what we actually got was really interesting.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that literally, if he's coming in and he doesn't know that much about it, it's kind of like an assessment on what the university and that education program did. It's also an indictment as well. So, I mean, it's a public space and it shouldn't be treated as a private space.
Right. Yeah. So. Yeah, another thing that he mentioned too was that as I was listening to him, I thought, wow, that's kind of crazy. But that you know, he became a rep, and then he said one of the big advances, and now this is back in the 90s, right? And I just became a teacher going into my fifth year. But something I take for granted is that my building holds monthly union admin meetings. So PAT sits down with the principal and vice principals, assistant principals, and we talk about issues every month. And so for him to say that that wasn't there, and that they fought to achieve that, that just gave me a little pause to sit back and say, wow, what protections do we enjoy? First of all, Oregon's not a right to work state yet, for now. But also that, you know, we have some protections that are supposed to be there, at least in form, right?
And that are supposed to protect you, you know, and it's, I think Curtis mentions due process, and first you gotta figure out what the process is and whether it's being adhered to or not. And that's whole experience as well.
Yeah, yeah. And I know, Chu, that you've dealt with that experience a little bit, and it is a process, and it's one that most folks are blind to until they're in it.
Yep, and I've gone from the bottom all the way to the top. I got a lot to say, but we don't got a limited amount of time.
Right. Started from the bottom, now we're here.
Yep.
Okay, so going to this next clip. In the next clip, Curtis Acosta begins to see some of the larger dynamics that are at work in his local. Let's listen to Curtis one more time.
I started noticing some issues that I had with our local TEA in a little bit before that. We were bargaining, and the bargaining was going poorly. We hadn't had a raise, even a cost of living increase in our salary in years. And the rank and file, we were pretty, you know, angry about it. We're pretty upset. So I felt like our union leadership, let me be clearer, was starting to splinter a bit. We had really progressive folks that I identified with that wanted to clap back on what was going on in bargaining, and then you had more conservative folks saying that this is the way it is, and la la la, kind of giving us this type of conciliatory, concessionary language. Hmm. And we're like, yeah, we're trying to survive, you know, as, you know, educators, as family. You know, my wife and I were both educators. I mean, we were struggling big time, and we weren't alone. There, you know, there was no way like a single family teacher household could survive on the salary that we had, let alone the freeze that we were going through. So we organized, and this is what's interesting. Our building had the most percentage and the most total membership.
Right.
I mean, even though it was a large membership. But we were able to organize other folks that grassroots-wise, because we were so large, that they came to us instead of TEA leadership, because they saw us splintering in TEA leadership. They came to our building leadership saying, hey, are you guys really serious about doing a sick out in order to get what we deserve? And we're like, yeah, that's exactly what we're planning on doing as a building. And so what ended up happening is, because folks knew of our strength as a building and we're the biggest school in the district, then it kind of, regardless of split in leadership, everybody kind of came our way. And I remember giving a speech before that at a rally at one of our school board meetings. We all showed up, and we were wearing our red t-shirts, and I was actually giving a speech, and the folks were really engaged in my fellow teachers, but the president at the time actually grabbed me, like pulled me down off of the ladder after he had introduced me, and I was giving a speech because I was like trying to rally the will to do this action.
So, Curtis describes this split. Thoughts? What stands out to you guys from that clip?
Instantly, my mind goes to race. You know, I think about PPS and PAT, and then I think about race. You know, to me, it feels like white power fighting white power, and then you have casualties that, like me, they get left out, you know, I'm on the side. So, yeah, it's interesting, you know. I feel like if a union is not a revolutionary union or a combative union, and then I'm willing to go, like Curtis has broken down really plain and simple, like, we're going to do this in order to achieve this. Right, like, I'm going to go on strike, and they're like, "Are you sure you want to do this?" Like, you know, it's like, no, it should be, yeah. That's how you operate. That's what unions do. Mm. And I think that there's this idea of like, a union, being part of a union, an organization. But I'm like, union is, like, we're a union right now sitting in this room. Mm. You know, anytime people get together, it's union. When we're in a classroom with children, that is a union, right? So I think that the idea of what a union is, it's not just a thing you pay dues to. It's something that you commit to. It's this idea of when people coming together. And I think that that really needs to be teased out. And it seems like what Curtis dealt with was definitely like a divide about what that is. Mm. Like, you know, oh, hey, we try to do this, and if you're doing this, we're not going to be able to achieve our goals, right?
Yeah.
And Curtis is like, wait a minute, hold on. Like where is this? Where is this? Like, it's a power thing.
It's an inversion of power, right? Where the leadership, and this is kind of the misnomer, right, is that leadership we think of as leading, as making the decisions, as pushing forward. But really, in a union, the leadership is the membership, the rank and file, the people, right? And so what I hear Curtis describing in that story of the president of Tucson Education Association actually pulling him down while he's rallying the people to organize is that clash of who's actually supposed to serve whom, right? And so what... I'm not sure.
It's a pretty common, I think, dynamic in unions that I've seen, right, where the rank and file are ready to fight, ready to push for things, and it's the folks that have taken on some of the, I'll use the word leadership, although we can debate that, but the leadership roles that are, you know, to use his words, he was saying, you know, concessionary or conciliatory language, right? Oh, let's just all calm down and, you know, tamp down any sort of, you know, passionate, you know, pleas for fighting. And
right. It's that rational, methodical, bureaucratic sort of mindset, right?
Yeah, and it can only be expressed in certain ways, certain avenues. Like if you're not sitting down and following this line right here, for you to jump up on a table and or whatever. I'm not sure if you jump. I mean, my mind is jumping up on a table with a red shirt. But to do that would be out of line of what we do, like, you know, from that union point of view. But it's kind of like Ronnie Herndon. I think that there was that one board meeting, and I wasn't there, obviously, but there's that one board meeting where he just felt compelled to jump up on a table.
Yeah. Ronnie Herndon is the chairman of the National Association of Head Start. He also runs Albina Head Start and was in the leadership of the Black United Front in the late 70s and early 80s, which advocated to desegregate Portland public schools, right, and advocated for the Black community. And Chu was referring to this moment where you can read about it in the Willamette Week. There was an article written at the time and a wonderful photograph where he looked and he thought, these folks aren't really, they think this is a joke. And he got up on the table and they shut the board meeting down.
Right.
Of course they did.
But that as a union member, seeing another union member doing that, maybe I might not agree with it, but you're going to definitely like respond. And like, to me, I would agree with it. I would be like, that's exactly how I feel. And that's exactly what should be done at any meeting where you're not being heard or met, or your needs aren't being met.
Yeah.
Sometimes there's not a schedule or like or an algorithm that you follow. You go X factor with it.
Right.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Labor Radio. And Chris,
yeah,
what do you got next?
Yeah, so the split that Curtis began to see before Mexican American Studies program, which was operating at Tucson High School, before it became a target of the state, the split kind of widened as the program began to face increasing pressure. Let's go to that clip.
What happened at MAS later too, Chris, is like there was a split, the same split was there. There were folks that were just absolutely loyal, committed, you know, backers of academic freedom and then our program too, both. And they're like, we can't let this stand. And they had our back. But you had this other part. In fact, we had, I never forget, we did a presentation to our local union board. And one of my colleagues and I, we left. And I was like, almost, I wasn't quite shaking, but inside I was. Because I'm like, why didn't that go well? It felt like it was going poorly. You can just tell when people are disengaged or resistant. And it was like half the room was half and half. And so we went to a local... Taqueria here and just had a drink together, and we're like, what just happened? And while we were there, just talking about how uncomfortable it was, I got a text from somebody inside the room saying, they're saying the problem is both sides are arrogant. They were equating us with Tom Horn and John Huppethal and these folks that were trying to come in and dismantle one of the most successful programs in the history of the state for Latino students. And we were like, what? Our arrogance came from standing up for ourselves. I mean, that to me is not arrogance. That to me is righteousness. And so the fact that about half of the folks in the room were seeing us as standing up for our beliefs and for educators and, you know, for so many different issues that this anti-American law that we felt was, you know, was being levied against our program, to have the room be split, I knew we were in trouble. And I knew we were in trouble across the board in Tucson. Early evidence of the fact that we were going to lose people who saw themselves as liberal, as Democrats, they were going to side not necessarily side with folks they knew were Tea Party, you know, anti-Mexican, anti-immigrant type.
Right. But they weren't going to stand solidly and firmly
exactly.
with you.
Exactly. Right. That they were going to be complicit. So, well, whatever happens to them, what happens, and we're not going to support them. They're going to have to fight this out on their own.
So, again, there's a lot that's packed in there. That was really interesting how, you know, that message that he received after they left the meeting. What's your response to that?
It's a feeling, you know. I mean, mm-hmm. I mean, last thing that we need to be doing is convincing people to be on our side, especially if they're union members. You know, I mean, it's as simple as that. And I guess the bigger question is, like, these are union members with other union members. I'm just going to go right here. There's union members sitting there with Curtis, who's also a union member, and they don't have his back. And he somehow, in his mind, he has to kind of like negotiate this thing of like not losing them. Like, when you get to that point, you know that it's already done. You know, if you have to convince people to be on your side, even though you're part of a quote unquote union, it's already lost. Mm. And to me, I'd rather maybe you just take that hit. Because in the end, what's it gonna take to actually, you're not on the same page. You know, there might be some interest convergence, like you said, there's some academic freedom stuff within there, but at the end of the day, you're not going to get to that place where you need to be, and it's, I don't know, I'm not sure. I mean, that's really the question that I wrestle with, is like, when do you just say no, and when do you continue to sit at the table, continue to come back?
Right.
But right there, that's problematic to me.
Yeah, and one of the things that didn't make it into the selection of clips that we talked about with Curtis Acosta was this idea that what he was actually doing within the Mexican American Studies program, the MAS program, was organizing. Stephen, do you want to just speak to that a little bit, that piece of the conversation, how that fits in here? Like, maybe you don't necessarily need that formal structure all the time to rely on that, but that there are other forms of organizing.
Sure. Yeah, and I've seen this other places too, where it's just rank and file members are actually doing the work that unions should be doing, right? And that's what he was doing. He was developing strong relationships with his students and with their parents and with some of the Latino community there. And that's organizing, that's building power, right? Yeah. And that's what unions should be doing. And that's what will keep the labor movement growing, right? Instead of what his union leadership was telling him, right? Which was, he's being arrogant. I mean, when I heard that word, sounded pretty racist.
Yeah,
to me.
And I just want to bring it back to that, because like literally that's the key right there. That's the point. There's a power difference. You know, so for example, I'm gonna use my situation. Like, when you have a person who is a teacher and you have other people who are in higher positions of power, and you're going back and forth. It's not an equal fight, so to speak. You know, like these certain individuals have the whole system behind. They have the whole mechanism of not only local government but the state behind them. You know, to do whatever they need to do to an individual who might be quote unquote like causing waves. Or asking the right or wrong questions, however you choose to see that. But definitely, I think that is completely racist to say that you're arrogant for standing up for yourself, right? And I mean, if that person clearly does not understand power, you know, I think that that's the missing piece to it. They're not equal. They're not on equal footing.
So what do you say in that situation, right? So if you could speak to that younger Curtis Acosta, right, who sees that moment and sees that shift, what would you then say? Like, what's the remedy there? Like, how then does he shift?
I think, once again, it's an assessment. If they're calling him arrogant, then yeah, you're doing the right thing. Like, you know that you're, I will say this, in teaching, you know that you're doing the right thing when you're in jeopardy of losing your job. It's completely insane, but that's the world that we live in, you know? And then you think about all the folks who are very comfortable and will be very comfortable in any job they have in a school district like Portland Public Schools, right? So look at the one, I mean, there are some that definitely have some issues with their performances, but I think that if you look at certain ones, teachers, that you'll see that literally it's, I don't know, I lost my train of thought. I'm gonna shut up now.
Well, yeah, that you know, when you are really advocating for students, that can be a risk. That can be a real risk.
Absolutely.
To your position.
Right.
Yes. We are ready for, we've got one more clip where Curtis talks about some support that the NEA, the National Education Association, wanted to offer for in support of that Mexican American Studies program, but there were some complications. So let's hear that.
The NEA had backed us at the national meeting. They're like, we're going to help these folks out. But the way it's structured, from what we were told, is that NEA was going to help through AEA, through TEA. So through that hierarchy. So we had to get, you know, two blessings before we could tap into the financial support that NEA had passed during their national convention. And so suffice it to say, whenever we had a talk with AEA in Phoenix, it didn't go our way. And they decided on their own how they were going to support us. And they wanted to do it with like literature and mailings. And we're like, no, we need legal support, you know? And so there was definitely a division about that as well. It was not pretty times.
So, Band-Aids for bullet wounds. Just want to clarify, the NEA is the National Education Association. The AEA is the Arizona Education Association, the equivalent of the Oregon Education Association in Arizona. And the TEA is the Tucson Education Association.
Brian, any response to what you heard there?
Yeah. We'll start on that one. I don't know. Can I pass this thing for a second?
Yeah. So yeah. National support, right? Which means that there were people who attended the national conference who were aware of what was going on because it had been publicized, right? And so they say, hey, they probably brought an NBI, right, a new business item to the floor to say, we need to support these educators in Tucson who are having their rights trampled. They're having this program targeted under a legal ban, right? And so they said, we need to support them. So the NEA committed to supporting them at the national conference. Then from the bottom, right, from the Mexican American Studies program, they began to petition for that support and say, hey, so, you know, we need some legal support. And the response is, oh no, we're going to do some leafleting. We're going to just, you know, talk about your issue and make sure people are aware, but we're not going to actually give you that material support that you're asking for.
Right. And it wasn't clear if that was because the way that, you know, assuming it was a new business item, the way that it was written, maybe it was poorly written, but it sounded like things got hung up because they had to go through not only their local union, which obviously the support was pretty split there.
Right.
But then they had to go to, he said, Phoenix, which I'm assuming is sort of where, sort of central, where the state union, AEA, is located. And so by the time he went through those two filters, he really wasn't able to take advantage of the support that was offered.
Yeah. And just, I mean, it's heartbreaking because, again, it just shows this structure of, like, as this, the support that came from the bottom is acknowledged at the top, and then, but by the time it gets back to its intended place, it has lost, and again, it would be curious to know like exactly what the reasons were. Probably some of the language, right, that would allow the state and local to use more discretion about how those funds were going to be used. But nevertheless, they were not being supported in the way that they asked. How does that speak to the idea of, I mean, that to me, I think of oppression in general, right? That there's this idea of charity, and that I'm going to give, you know, the Gates Foundation, right? They give, but they give the way they want to give, not necessarily the way that people need, right? And I'm just seeing that whole thing there. And Chu, do you have any last thoughts? We got
to
wrap up.
You know, I'm just thinking like that's like the last thing as an educator that you would want to happen when a student is asking you for something that they need help with, and you're giving them the thing that you think that you think they need when indeed they're asking the thing, they're telling you this is what I need, and right there that's problematic.
Yeah. Thank you for bringing it all the way from bureaucracy to everyday practice.
I hate bureaucracy
all day.
They need to just be gone from every single.
All right. So thank you, Mr. Chu, Brian Chu, for joining us tonight. Thanks to our engineer, Danielle. Thank you, Stephen. This is Chris Reiser. You've been listening to Labor Radio. Tune in next Monday and every Monday at 6 to catch another Labor Radio show.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Have you seen KBOO's Fuzzy Boo Van? It's a giant furry blue Muppet mobile that brings music and joy wherever it's found in Portland and across the region. We're having a contest this summer. If you spot the van, post a picture on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter with the hashtag FuzzyBoo and you'll be entered to win a chance to have FuzzyBoo at your event, as well as other prizes. Each picture you take is another chance to win. For more info and clues on where to find the van, go to kboo.fm/fuzzyboo.
What's good? This is Tevin, your host here at Combined Culture Radio.
Hey, what's up? I'm Jalen, Super Ultra Extra, your co-host. And here at Combined Culture, we're